So, super fast to get through this. Are you ready?
All right, let's do this.
Boy, oh boy, Will, you sure do sound sick.
I feel bad.
You sort of sound like you're feeling really bad. Well, one thing we're going to have to do is just tear through this intro then so that we can get past your sickness and on to movie. How does that sound?
Great, let's do this.
Now, when was the last time we talked about Bergman? Do you even remember?
It's 30 seconds ago.
30 seconds ago. I think it was when we talked about chessmen and playing chess and on the beach and the plague. Remember that?
Yep.
Seventh Seal. Well, would it surprise you that that Seventh Seal movie was in the late 50s and we are now in the early 80s?
You know, it for some reason doesn't.
Now, what can you tell me about what happened to Ingmar Bergman in between the Seventh Seal and today's movie?
Oh boy, let's test my memory retention.
Tell me what happened in 1976.
You were born.
Okay, that's good. That's good. I remember all the presents you give me. What else? What happened to Mr. Bergman in 1976?
Oh, yeah. He was horrifically traumatized by the Swedish court system for tax fraud.
Yes. They accused him of tax fraud. They arrested him. He was ended up having all the charges dismissed. But what happened to him?
He was traumatized.
He was traumatized. And what did he? Yeah. So he left. He left Sweden. Do you remember where he went?
Germany.
He went to Germany, land of beer and those strappy dresses, those pants with the suspend lederhosen.
Yeah.
He went to the land of lederhosen in Nachtwurst and made some movies there, directed a bunch of plays, but decided it was time for him to come back to Sweden and direct what would be, for him at the time, his last movie. Yeah. And he was told by a friend that he should make something upbeat. And so he was like, because I'm so depressed, that's the best time to make something upbeat. I'll make something semi-autobiographical, but not totally autobiographical. He would always tell people, don't get that in your head. There's a lot of differences here, but pretty autobiographical. Also, I'm going to meld every single concept and theme and idea that I've ever had and put it all into this movie. Also, I'm not going to make it for anyone in particular. I'm not going to make it any particular genre. I'm not going to make it from any particular point of view. If I feel like changing point of view halfway through the story, I'll do that. Here's my script. It's 1,000 pages long. And it was so long that his producer, by the way, who's Lou Grade, who is the man who was also responsible for making the Muppets happen.
Right.
Lou Grade was like, I'm out. See ya. I can't afford this. Bergman was like, oh, well, I guess this is a sign from God that I shouldn't make this movie. And then another producer jumped right on and was like, here's all the money in the world. He literally was like, don't worry, I will take care of the money. You make whatever you want. And so he's like, great, I have 54 actors. I need 54 actors. I need some elaborate sets. I need a bunch of location stuff. Let's make a movie. And the movie's so long, of course, that he ended up releasing it as a miniseries on television, as well as a major motion picture that's a much shorter cut. We are watching the miniseries. We are watching episode one today. What is the name of this movie? Oh, Willow.
Fanny and Alexander.
Fanny and Alexander. And what do we know about the name Alexander?
I hate it.
You hate it so much. It's your least favorite name. Do you remember why?
Yeah. Alexander murdered my parents.
Oh my God, what happened?
You'll find out soon.
You'll find out next week. No, I don't remember why you hated Alexander. What was that all about? Oh, you don't actually hate Alexander.
You came up with that.
That's right. That was my bad. I did that. Let's go watch the first episode of Ingmar Bergman's celebrated miniseries / movie, Fanny and Alexander. Are you ready?
Nope.
Here we go. I'm Phil.
And I'm Willow.
And it's Del Toro time. Fanny and Alexander, episode one. Would it be fair to say this was all set up?
Yep.
Nothing happened
in this.
Well, a statue did move, and death did creep out of the room.
That's true.
I did not know. This is still considered like lighthearted Bergman. In case you're wondering.
For some reason, I think I felt more joyful watching, was it The Seventh Seal?
The Seventh Seal had more of a sense of humor about it.
Yeah.
It was a little goofier. We haven't gotten to really the supernatural stuff in this storyline, though.
I want to get to the supernatural stuff so I can stop caring about the people stuff.
It's an interesting setup to this movie with the Bergman, because we want to be like the Bergman. We want to live like the Bergman. Sorry, I'm
trying to... get arrested several times and get forcibly exiled from Sweden.
He voluntarily exiled himself from Sweden. But let's sweeten the pot a little bit by talking of.
That was a bad joke.
Every time you touch your headphones, it goes like in my ears, like you have electric fingers.
Sorry, my head is too small for any type of headphones, so they're slipping all the time.
Oh, I get it. My head is so big. You know why my head is so big? Because it's so full of dreams. So,
not anymore.
Are you insinuating that I have given up on all my dreams? All my dreams?
What were your dreams as a child? This is a good segue for Fanny and Alexander.
I was going to say, strangely enough, to talk endlessly about the Berenstain Bears for the rest of my life. I never told anyone that. Paint myself into a podcasting corner. That was my dream.
I did spend an hour talking to someone online about your podcast.
Which podcast?
The Berenstain Bears podcast.
Okay. Good. That's the only one that will leave people scratching their heads.
No, because I was my new DM, because I have 5 DMs now. That's something that happened while we were taking our hiatus. I'm playing 5 different D&D games with
you.
Five
have
different
you collect
people.
D&D campaigns like I collect podcasts.
Yep. Yeah. But no, I was having my first like real conversation with him, and we somehow got to the topic of the Berenstain Bears podcast.
I thought you were going to say you started developing a Bear Country-based RPG.
Yep. New plan.
Which you could do. There's enough adventure to be had in Bear Country. We know that. Tom himself is worth a campaign.
I started explaining the intricacies of the Bearverse.
Uh-huh.
And then I got to the Bear Metaverse.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, I have no idea what's happening anymore. Yeah.
It's complicated. You're like, I'm so sorry this is my father. Well, speaking of complicated children and childhoods, Fanny and Alexander, episode 1. It's episode fun. So yeah, it was the length of a movie, but it was all set up. It was just basically moving our players into place for presumably the rest of the story. And we still haven't figured out why the movie is called Fanny and Alexander.
No. Still not sure which child Fanny is, by the way.
She's the blonde girl.
Which one?
The other one.
There's two little blonde girls, and they look really similar.
She is the one who, in the beginning of the film, was wearing a bib that said Fanny on it.
Oh, I still can't picture which one that is in my head.
It's very rare you get a movie that sets it up with a few of the characters at least wearing name tags.
The only, like, when I think back to that now, I only picture the Olsen twins? What are the twins?
The Olsen twins. Those are people.
Yeah, I just picture those two as the two little girls in this movie.
Okay.
Little kids.
They are little kids, yeah. So this is a movie that starts off... Well, it starts off in a... Alexander is kind of our... We're kind of seeing the movie through his eyes. Like, a little bit. But not entirely.
No. The POV in this movie doesn't make any sense because it keeps changing.
Yeah, and I think I mentioned that before. Like when Bergman was writing the script, he was like, I'm just going to keep changing point of view because who cares? I'm writing whatever I want. Again, limitless budget.
Man.
Yeah.
Who is this producer that was like, you know what? I don't care. Do whatever the hell you want.
The producer was Jorn Donner, who died in 2020.
I thought you were going to say his name was Jorn Donner.
He is not Jorn. He was Jorn Donner. He died from prostate and lung cancer in 2020. So sorry, Jorn.
Why was he just like, I'll fund whatever you want? Did he just have endless money?
I believe he was friends with Bergman. And remember, to be a producer, you do not have to have a lot of money. You have to be able to get a lot of money. So it's all about connections you have. And I think he just believed in Bergman and was like, this looks great. This is a great script and a great story. Sky's the limit. And when I say sky, it was the most expensive movie ever made in Sweden at the time. But you have to remember that that means it cost like $6 million. Like, that wasn't much for American movies, even at the time. It was $6 million in Sweden. So it was a pricey movie, but... And he had some of the biggest actors of the time working with him and stuff. So he was paying people, and, you know, those sets are gorgeous. Yeah. So
much fire. There had to have at least been one fire set.
We will get to all the fire. This is the most... This movie had us on edge just because of the possibility of the children bursting into flames. Which I... Part of me was wondering if something like that was going to happen because they were so focused on fire. So the movie starts off, it's Christmas. Well, it starts off with Alexander wandering around in his parents / grandmother's place looking for people. There's no one around. Mm-hmm. The house, I believe the word opulent would be a good way to describe it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty nice. It has a statue of a naked woman in it. And mm-hmm. She does move at one point and look at Alexander. He sees her move. He sees Death with his scythe creeping out of the room. And apparently this is based on, actually, Bergman would do this in his like parents' house. He would like wander around when they weren't there and just see things and imagine things happening. Mm-hmm. To him, that was like part of being a kid. It's like,
I did that at Grandma and Grandpa's house in Texas because their house was so big.
Yeah, even though their house isn't big.
So big. They're not.
It's not a big house. It's a modest one story.
It's bigger. It's big compared to the houses that I was in.
Right. It's a Texas house, so it's sprawling.
Yeah. And they had all of those like dolls and stuff. So
they have that ceramic dog.
Yeah. But I was mostly talking about the doll with the parasol that sits in the chair.
Yes. I don't think they still have the parasol doll.
Oh, that's sad.
But my mom used to make dolls, and that's one of them. And they had painted on eyes, mm-hmm. and external genitalia, which was very interesting for my mom to do. They were anatomically correct dolls, all of them.
No, I used to just wander around and like stare at things and pretend they were moving. So that was my that was what I did in Texas.
You know, you can do that without even having to pretend. You can just look around. And things move. Things move on their own accord.
Now, the vibe of the beginning of this movie really sent me back to me being in Texas and all the adults sitting in the other room and Noah and Tori like not being there yet.
Yeah. 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 Nothing else to do because everyone's talking. Mm-hmm. And so, Alexander's just tooling around, just hanging out on his own. His grandmother comes looking for him. She's like, "Want to play cards?" And he's like, "Eh." And then the movie jumps ahead or jumps to that evening. It's Christmas, and you find out that Alexander's parents are theater people, the mm-hmm. worst kind of people. His parents are Oscar. What?
Go off on a lot of tangents this episode, by the way, just for fair warning.
Fair enough.
Because we had a conversation yesterday in class.
Uh huh.
Where. We were talking about, because my class got back from Italy, that I didn't get to go on. Anyways, sad, boohoo, whatever. But they were talking about how, like, we were talking about how the service industry in Italy is different from in America. And my teacher goes, "Yeah, all the servers weren't theater people like you see in New York."
Mm-hmm.
And then one of the, because there's a theater kid in my class, he's like, he does theater. And he went, "Hey." And I was like, wow, my dad used to be a server when he was doing theater stuff.
Yeah.
Why are all servers theater people?
Because it's a job with flexible hours. You can work during the day and still get paid. And it's a kind of job that needs workers who can put up with a lot. And that's the definition of of theater people. They put up with a lot of rejection and a lot of harsh words. Alexander is played by Bertil Gove, who was like 11 or 12 when he played the part, and he only did one other thing after this, another Bergman film, Bergman TV film, after the rehearsal, which is kind of Bergman's one of his follow-ups to this story. Mm-hmm. But Bergman like cast him because he was like, this kid was really natural. Like just he was and he was down for anything. Like he was just this like really nice kid. His parents are Emily and Oscar, and there is a massive age difference between the two of them.
I spent this entire movie trying to figure out who the parents were because I couldn't tell.
So it's troubling or for a viewer who, because you're just thrown in. You're not introduced to these characters.
Yeah.
And the first time you see the father, Oscar, he's wearing a fake beard because he's an actor that looks very much like the real beard of the actor playing his brother in this movie.
Yep.
So, yes. So you and I were both like, wait, which one is the... Which one's the dad? Is it the guy? Is it this guy? Plus, they're dressed up, then they're in their night clothes, and their hair is nice, and then it's not, and they're wearing glasses, then they're not. And so it's just, it's very, like, disorienting who is who for. And there's a ton of people in this movie. Yeah. Because you and I started arguing about it.
I still don't know who the other two kids were, because isn't it, like, at that point, didn't they make it clear that none of the other brothers had kids?
Had kids. Carl certainly doesn't have children. They talk about that. And Gustav doesn't, I don't believe, have no,
he
they
has
have
a teenage daughter.
We think. He has a daughter named Ava, who might be the other little girl.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to keep track because the other kids just don't seem to matter.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's Ava and, I believe it's the other little girl, but I could be wrong. Because there's Petra, who we thought was the daughter, but then we were like, maybe she's the maid? I can't tell. Everyone's dressed down.
Yeah.
Yeah. I tried so hard to find a family tree.
Petra seemed so disappointed in
Gustav.
Him and then his wife having... Right. Sex.
Yes.
So it made it seem like she was like, oh, this is just the way that my parents go. But maybe she's not. It's very confusing.
It's very confusing. But to kind of try to sum up a little bit, all that really happens in this episode is there's a giant Christmas celebration. And there's the grandmother who's kind of the matriarch of the family. Mm-hmm. Alexander's parents are theater people, and they have this big Christmas play with the three wise men who are hard to look at.
Mm-hmm.
Remember how the three wise men are typically portrayed as a white guy, a black African gentleman, and a man from somewhere in Asia? Well, they do that, but they didn't do it by casting people of the appropriate races. No. There's a little bit of face paint going on.
A lot of it.
Yes.
And fake facial hair.
Fake facial hair and some eye makeup, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes. The less said about this, the better. Also, it doesn't seem to be a very interesting play or a very long one.
It lasts for 2 seconds. Everyone like is in the audience like, oh, this always takes so long for them to come on stage.
Yeah.
And they're all dressed to the nines and it looks like they're going to see like an opera or something. And then the play opens and they're like, it's Jesus, he's been born. And then it's over.
Yeah, it's just the nativity scene and it's like 5 minutes long. Which leads me to believe like I thought maybe they had like jumped ahead or something, like you were only seeing the end. I don't know. But people seem pretty bored by it, and then people leave. And the father gives a speech, which is where he takes off the beard, which I should have remembered. And the theater company's kind of in financial straits a little bit. This is one of those weird movies and or plays where like everyone's talking about how they don't have any money, but everything looks pretty fancy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a lot of old money and a lot of like they've lived in these houses for their whole lives, but if you knew what to look for, you could probably see that things were a little shabbier. Because they have like 100 servants as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's Christmas and the grandmother is Helena Ekdahl. She's cool. I like the grandmother a lot.
Yeah.
She's single. Living life large.
She's widowed.
She's widowed.
She's not single.
I mean, she is.
She's not single.
Well, she's kind of seeing this guy, Isaac, who is a Jewish shop owner, I believe, mm-hmm. who was her lover before she was widowed.
Yeah.
But also her husband's best friend.
And the husband knew about them.
Right. And actually became the guy's best friend after he found out about them.
Yes.
Yeah. Because this is Sweden, and I don't understand how anything works. there's a lot of infidelity so far, and no one seems put off by it.
Each relationship that has infidelity seems like an open relationship, it seems like. It's
Right. It's kind of hard to read. And when I say infidelity, it's the husband's. Mm-hmm. No, I guess the grandmother was cheating on the husband. So the other example is Gustav, one of her sons, who is very open about just mm-hmm. hitting on every woman in the household. And his wife, who I love, Ava.
Who's friends with Daenerys Targaryen.
Who's friends with it's not actually Daenerys Targaryen, but Alexander's mother, Emily, looks kind of like Daenerys Targaryen.
Which is funny, because isn't the woman who plays Daenerys Targaryen named... No, that's Emilia.
Yes. Close enough. So we have these three...
Wait, she's his mother.
Who's whose mother?
Emily is his... Emily is the blonde woman.
Yes, with the big eyebrows, okay. Who's very young. It might be hard for you to realize she's very young, but from my position as an old man... She's very young.
I couldn't tell who she was supposed to be.
Yes. She is Alexander's mom. You see them in bed together with the father later on. They're in the next room.
That was before I realized that guy was, his father. Yeah.
So there's the grandmother, Helena. She's seeing this guy named Isaac, who is Jewish. They sort of smooch. They're older. They stay up way too late, and he keeps falling asleep. And she's very sad because she's growing old and life's kind of passing her by. But she's pretty hip. She's pretty friendly. I like her. She has three sons, Gustav, Oscar, and Carl. And Gustav has a beard and sleeps around not behind his wife's back, in front of his wife's back. That's Gustav. Oscar is the guy who runs the theater company and has the son named Alexander and the daughter named Fanny. And Carl is a nightmare. He farts for fun and berates his German wife a lot and throws her on the ground a lot and tells her she's ugly and smells bad. A lot. He's a piece of work and we hate him.
Yep.
Yeah. We do not stand Carl. He does fart a lot, though. You might say there's a whole scene devoted to him farting for the amusement of the children. He's running up and down the stairs with his pants down, farting, and then he farts and puts out candles. Not the first farting scene in the movie either. One of the little boys farts at table and there's a discussion about it. Mm-hmm. Which leads me to ask, is farting a Swedish thing?
I don't think so.
No. Like, if you went to Sweden, are they like, oh, we know all, oh, we're connoisseurs of the fart?
Probably not.
If you ever make it to Sweden.
That will never happen. My question is this him trying to make this lighthearted? He's like, this got really weird and dark really fast. I guess I have to put some fart jokes in there.
Yes and no, I think. I think the idea is that while we're at Christmas, the concept is everything is cool. Everything is fun. This is what the kids see. We're seeing everything kind of through the eyes of the children. There's a lot of singing, a lot of dancing, a lot of stories to be told. The adults are goofy and drunk, and everyone's having a great time. Gustav is swinging the maids around. Oh, yeah, and all the servants eat with all mm-hmm. the regular, like, the family at table.
The servant that Gustav is pursuing at this time.
Are you talking about Anakin Skywalker's mother? Are you talking about Anakin Skywalker's mother.
I don't know, am I?
Didn't I send you that picture? I sent you that picture.
No, you just sent me Anakin Skywalker's mother. No context.
No, I said I was wondering who this was, and I sent you the picture.
Okay. No, you just said you just texted me Darth Vader's mom. That's it. That's all you texted me.
Oh, I guess the other picture didn't go through. I sent you two pictures. Pernilla August plays Madge, or Maya. I don't know how to say her name in Swedish. She is the redheaded servant, like maid, who is sleeping with Gustav. And the whole time I'm like, why does her face look familiar? Why does her face look familiar? She plays Darth Vader's mom in the Star Wars prequels. And all I remembered about her was George Lucas saying,
We cast this Swedish actress. She couldn't speak really English, so she kind of had to learn her lines phonetically. She was pretty good.
We'll come and find out. She's a very famous Swedish actress who played in Bergman films. Like, she's very good. I like her performance a lot. And then she gave birth to Darth Vader, not in real life.
That would be really dope, though.
She gave birth to a Darth Vader doll.
She's weird. The character, not the actress.
Mm-hmm. She's young. She's goofy.
She gets smacked in the face.
She gets smacked in the face. A lot of people get smacked in the face.
She gets smacked in the face by the wife of Gustav, who then is like, also, we have a Christmas present for you.
Yeah. And that was the point where I was like, how cool is Gustav's wife with this situation? Because she's very friendly to everyone. Mm-hmm. But then she slaps the woman Gustav is sleeping with.
I mean, to be fair, I thought that that was more her being like, this is what I have to do because this is, you know, just to keep up appearances, I guess.
I guess. So Gustav is sleeping with Madge, Maya. I don't know how to say her name.
I thought this was the first time they would be sleeping together.
Well, and they don't even get all the way through it because.
Well, first she is weird to Alexander.
Yeah, so you asked, is it supposed to be light so it can be dark? Kind of. I think the whole idea is that while the celebration's going on, everyone's just kind of losing themselves in the fun. Once the kids go to bed, things take a dark turn, and you start seeing kind of really what's going on underneath. Like, the adult world is a lot messier and less friendly than...
More lesbians, though.
Very true. Very true. So the maid, you said she's weird with Alexander. She is. He obviously has a crush on her. Like, mm-hmm. a little boy crush. And I feel like she knows this and is teasing him mercilessly about it simply by acting like coming on to him in a way that he misinterprets as serious, but she's just being a goof. Mm-hmm. But she probably shouldn't be doing, because that's not cool.
No.
Yeah. And then she goes and she sleeps with his uncle. But their coitus is quite interruptus, because her uncle is getting older, Alexander's uncle Gustav is getting older, and so his situation seems to be he can't perform the way he used to in bed. And that happens, and she starts laughing at him, and he gets very upset. She starts laughing at him because she's young, and he gets very upset because he's old, and his manhood is threatened. And he tries to solve this by having sex with his wife, I guess.
Which he does.
Which he does, and she's all into it. She's like, great. Whoever Petra is not into it.
No.
Yeah, he sends the maid out, or whoever Petra is, to get some food, and she comes back.
I think Petra is the wife's lesbian lover.
You think that? Then let's say that that's the case, and let's prove it otherwise.
Cool.
Yeah, because it's that thing where, like, everyone's just kind of, like, laying all over each other at times, mm-hmm. and you're like, I don't know. Everyone seems pretty comfortable. It seems like a pretty uptight, like a pretty stressful family to be a part of. But it's a pretty rad Christmas celebration.
They do the train dance.
They do a train dance. They sing a song to the Tomta.
Yes.
They are singing a song to what does it say in the subtitles?
The
Christmas gnome. But if you listen to the actual words, it's Tomta, and Tomta is something that we celebrate in this household. Instead of Santa Claus, we have Tomta, which is a thing in Minnesota. Like, Tomta, because there's a large Scandinavian population, there's a lot of Tomta stuff around. So yes, the Tomta, and there's like the porridge too. He recites Carl recites a poem to the Tomta porridge, which is cute. And you're like, oh, this Carl guy doesn't seem too bad. That Carl guy's too bad.
There's also a really awesome horror story scene.
A really awesome horror story?
Scene, yeah.
Yes, and?
You remember this?
Go on. Tell the chair.
What is his name? Oscar?
Oscar, yes.
Comes in because the kids are all up and Alexander's doing some weird slideshow thing.
Magic lantern.
Yeah, and his wife, Emily, is like, get the kids to go to sleep. And he's like, yeah, sure, no problem.
Right. I'm a theater wasted. Dad.
Yeah, but he's completely wasted as well.
Yeah.
And he tells the kids a story about a chair being the most valuable chair. And there's some moral to the story that I couldn't read because half of my subtitles were missing.
And he improvises this story. He just grabs the chair in the kids' room. It's just a chair. And he's like, did you know this is the most valuable chair in the world? And the kids are all into it. It's pretty cute.
Yeah. It reminded me of when we were in Texas and you would tell us all a story.
Tell who a story?
Tell me Noah and Tori a story.
Yeah. I used to do that, didn't I?
Yeah.
I would like get up and act out a bedtime story for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Man.
Usually a spooky one.
Well, I'd make them spooky. I thought that Red Riding Hood was more fun if it was about a werewolf.
Or a banshee.
Yeah. I always told a good spooky tale for bed. Good old dad. And so he tells the chair story. And you're like, this guy is a good dad drama dad. Then we cut over to Carl and his wife, who is a lovely German woman who doesn't speak Swedish very well. But she sings beautifully. She looks gorge. And then we see them in their room together, and what happens?
Bad things.
It's all a nightmare. Carl is the worst. We dislike the man.
Yeah.
He
needs a therapist. He needs several therapists.
They need a couples therapist. They need a divorce.
Yeah.
And he needs to get his stuff together because he's out of money. He doesn't have his mother won't loan him any money anymore because he never pays it back. He married his wife. I don't know what he thought he was going to get out of this relationship, but she's broke. She can't speak the language very well. So he just proceeds to literally berate her nonstop in their bedroom about what a horrible person she is, how bad she smells, how ugly she is. She's on and off crying and trying to placate him. He eventually gets physical with her and throws her onto the floor. He's a terrible, terrible, terrible wiener man, and we dislike. Don't be a Carl. Very bad. Don't do it. If you learn nothing else from this podcast, learn that.
Don't be a Carl. And if don't your name's Carl, change it.
Change it, because all people will be able to think of is Fanny and Alexander.
Exactly.
Yes, William Shakespeare's Fanny plus Alexander. There's other characters. I think that the other kids might be cousins.
I thought they were the maid's kids.
It's hard to tell. I have a feeling that A, we'll either figure it out in the next part, or B, it doesn't matter. I think that they're just other kids. And I thought they were brothers and sisters because they're all sleeping in the same room together and there seemed to be plenty of room for them. But that's not the case. They all...
Okay. To be fair, me, Noah, and Tori slept in the same bed together, and we're not brother and sister.
That's true. right. But they are at their house, so I was like, oh, if there's enough room...
I thought they were at the grandmother's house.
So, the grandmother and Oscar and Emily share a house, but it's split in half.
Okay.
I had to read up to figure this out. When you see in the beginning, you see Alexander open kind of a secret door that's built into the wall. That's him going from his parents' side of the house to his grandmother's side of the house.
Okay.
Where it's basically her own house, but it's attached to their house. And it's that passageway is how you get from one to the other. And he goes to her house because she has all the cool stuff, basically. She has all the statues and the things. But one thing we get from this is we find out that Oscar and Emily's theater troupe is about to mount Hamlet. Mm-hmm. The kids want parts in Hamlet. I don't know who you would cast them as. There's no kids.
Kids. They said that they wanted to be the
page.
The pages. Yeah.
I don't remember there being pages in Hamlet. I know that there's characters who, like, the king is like, go get me this. So maybe that's it. But I think they're supposed to be adults.
There's a lot of pages in Hamlet. There's a whole script.
zing, zing, and zoom. You win the award today. You win the funny award. Jack in the Box comes boinging out of my head and says, congratulations on winning the jokes. I don't know what that means. So yes. Stupid. This show is canceled. We're not doing any more of these. Sorry, everyone. We broke Willow. There are a lot of pages in Hamlet. I do agree. David Standifer, my friend from high school, played a page in our production of Hamlet. He was the guy who was holding the poisoned wine goblet behind me because I played the king. And at one point during the final sword fight, the king is like, give me the cup. And I gesture back to get it. And I knock the cup and it splashes all over David Standifer. And I felt very bad. Plus it's like, oh, I guess you spilled all the poison wine, king. What you going to do? So we had to do it without anything in the goblet. And now that I think about it, I was like, why did we have anything in the goblet anyway? Like, you don't have to have anything in this gold goblet. Like, that's, what were we thinking? Of course that was going to happen. Also, our costumes are made entirely out of taffeta, which is the worst thing to make costumes out of. But our director wanted us to glisten like jewels on the stage. I was terrible. In any case, they're doing Hamlet. The kids want to be in it, and the father is going to be playing the ghost of Hamlet's father. Hold on to that thought. I have a feeling it's going to be symbolic as we really? go through the story. And then we cannot not mention the fire. Please tell us about the fire.
There's so much of it everywhere. All over the trees, all over the table, all over the ground.
All over the kids' room.
Yep.
If there is a square inch of surface space, this family has a candle with a fire in it. And not just a candle, a tall, skinny candle that looks precariously balanced.
Yep.
And I get it. I think it's 1910 is when this is supposed to take place. There's not a whole lot of electric light in the house. I mean, there is electric light in the house, but you want to fill the house with light. It's Christmas. I know that that's a thing in Sweden. It's not the whole thing. Like, you put the crown on, like the wreath on your head, and there's candles in the wreath. Like, isn't that a thing?
The only thing about Swedish celebration I know is from Midsommar, and I don't think that's necessarily accurate.
Not necessarily accurate. We haven't seen to the end of this movie yet.
At the end of the movie, all the kids get eaten by a bear and set on fire.
But you were right. They do that thing where you light the Christmas tree with long candles. I don't know how. I've never understood who did that first and why.
An idiot?
What?
A moron? A dumbo?
Why did it work? Why was someone like, I got it? And like, we know. Going back tens of thousands of years, the one thing human beings know is trees burn. That's how we developed civilization. That was like the crux of civilization was we learned that trees catch fire. And then you're like, how are we going to decorate this tree? How about fire? And you see the maids like putting the candles in the tree. And I'm just like, this had to have killed so many people once upon a time. Because houses were just waiting to burn. That's, you build houses out of flammable material. I don't know. It drove us to.
It seems like it was a thing that was meant, because when like a town would come together to celebrate Christmas, they'd have a big tree in the center of town.
Yeah.
And like you'd light candles outside. Outside.
But then you haul the fire tree into the living room, surround it by more fire.
And also with flammable decorations all over it.
And flammable clothes all over the children.
And they're, like, balancing on a ladder, like, leaning over the fire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And nothing happens. No, I mean, okay, so the movie ends with them getting into their sleighs and going off.
One horse sleighs.
I believe they had a two-horse open sleigh.
Two-horse open sleigh. There was a couple one-horse open sleighs
there were
after
some.
Theirs, though.
Everyone's getting into their open sleighs, and they're heading to church for...
They're following the fire.
For midnight mass. Yes, we are literally following fire. Because they don't just have fire inside the house. They bring it out into the open. Like, you see Alexander, like, jump off the sleigh, and he's like, hold on, I forgot my fire. And he goes, and he gets some fire, and he brings it back with him.
Yep.
And they head off to church. So for all we know, they're going to come back from church and all the houses are going to be burned down. I don't know if that's what happens in episode two. But the basic crux of this is there's three sons. They've each got their own problems to deal with. Christmas is pretty fun. Oscar's a theater guy. Carl is having a little trouble in bed.
Gustav's
having a little trouble in bed.
Carl's having a lot of trouble in bed.
Carl's having a moment, and the wives are either long suffering or just suffering.
Two of the wives seem pretty happy. I don't know what to tell you.
I'm gonna have to say that everybody in this movie, from the kids on up, are fantastic. Like, whether or not you like the characters, they're really just pulling out all the stops. Like, it's a very just engaging to watch all of their performances. As much as we hated watching Carl berate his wife,
yeah,
you were like, I'm ready for this to be over. Thanks.
Yep, I think I said those exact words.
Yeah,
in that exact way.
But this is Bergman doing lighthearted. This is Bergman saying, no,
he was
no,
like, you know what would. What's lighthearted mean again? You set everything on fire. That's light, right?
I think what they mean is that he's looking back to a time in his life when things seemed a little bit easier, but he was on the crux of discovering that life isn't as sunny as you might think. If you had a pretty easy childhood, you start. What did I just read? I just read something that said, like, childhood ends when you start worrying about the future. And I don't know if I
never had a childhood, apparently.
I don't know if I believe that because I've seen enough kids who worry about the future. You
raised me.
But there is a moment in every kid's life when you're like, you know, it starts either very young or it can last for a while. But there's a moment when you go, oh, like, things are a lot harder than I thought. Hopefully that time came later to most people. But unfortunately, it happens very early for a lot of people where you're like,
unfortunately, I was like 4 years old.
You were like 4 years old. Yeah. Not me. I didn't discover how hard life was. Period. That's called compartmentalization. I just put all the bad stuff over there. And people are like, well, when are you going to deal with all that bad stuff? And I'm like,
never.
I'm like, that's why there's this race going on. The dealing with the bad stuff versus death race. It's like near, 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 near. They're neck and neck. If you get to the death part first, you win. And then everyone else has to deal with all that bad stuff you tucked away. Oh, that's dark, but not Bergman dark. So yeah, lovely looking picture. I did look through the theatrical release of this up to this point, and it's pretty much the same. It's a half hour shorter. It's the first hour of the movie. It cuts out most of the Christmas stuff. It cuts that down substantially. Cuts out like just moments here and there throughout the scenes. Scenes are just sort of shortened up a little bit. Keeps in the farting.
Good.
Didn't want you to think that we'd forgotten about that. It makes sure you know that this is important. But it also cuts the appearance of death from the beginning, which I found a choice. I was like, okay. But again, these are all Bergman's choices. So he did them for a reason. So I've also read a number of things that said the movie is a better representation of the story. And I've read an equal number that say the miniseries is a better representation of the story. So... who knows? I own them
both. somewhere in between.
Somewhere down the middle. So, I think that's it for episode one of Fanny and Alexander. Do you agree?
Yeah. Yeah. We had some jokes, had some fire, had a lot of fire.
a whole lot of fire.
I don't think the audience understands just how much fire. Like, I can't overstate how much fire there was.
A good chunk of fire.
Yeah. And yeah. Everything was flammable.
Yeah. Every single thing was catch fireable. And the
dinner table, on their dinner cloth, covered in fire. Right. One kid knocks something over, everything's on fire.
Yeah. Also, their hearts are on fire for one another. It's a dangerous place to live, Sweden, in the early 1900s. But they got through it with vim and vigor. So next week will be episode two of and three. Episodes two and three of Fanny and Alexander. We'll get probably a little more plot, a little more action. What if it just becomes all action? What if, like, the sleigh, it immediately starts off and, like, someone's, like, chasing them on a sleigh. And then it's like, oh, yeah, see, episode two is just a chase sequence.
The fire that he went to grab was actually a flamethrower.
Right. The fire he went to grab, he accidentally incinerates his whole family. And that's when you find out that he has mutant powers. So, just keep listening, keep tuning in. If you're wondering where I got Fanny and Alexander from, I got the Criterion Blu-ray, which looks beautiful and, has so much supplementary material. You would go mad trying to read and watch all of it. There is a movie's worth of supplements. So I will be looking at that in my own time. But also I don't want to spoil anything for myself. So. That's that. Are we done?
Yep. Bye.
Goodbye, everyone. Goodbye. You can find us on Twitter at Del Toro Time. You can listen to my other podcasts, Deep in Bear Country, the one that Willow was talking about Berenstain Bears, or Pizza Toast. We're discussing the Georgia Nicholson series, and it's fab, fabity fab with knobs. So listen to Pizza Toast if you want to hear me and my friend Christy talk about teenage girl books.
Me and some person. Can't remember
me and
their
someone
name.
Else. Me and Christy talk about teenage girl books, which is what we talk about on that one. So, everyone have a fun day and get plenty of exercise.
We have an outro for the show. You do realize that, right?
Well, that's right. I was going to go take a walk, but it is grody outside. So I'm just going to sit inside and stew in my own fluids.
That's not the outro.
I'm Phil.
And I'm Willow.
And we'll see you when
it's Del Toro time.